Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I have a very interesting topic to bring to all of you today, where I'm going to be getting out of the realm of EDH partially, and we're going to talk about Standard. Or, more specifically, 60-card constructed formats like Standard, like Modern, Pioneer, Historic, whatever have you, it all works out the same. So, in order to help me talk about Standard and other 60-card formats, I'm going to introduce my special guest for today, Levdev. Hey, how's it going today?
Doing splendid. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. So, Lev, I know that we've been friends for a while now. We've been playing on a lot of game streams, just talking on Discord, things like that. And you're a pretty cool guy, got all sorts of amazing deck ideas. And where can people find you on the internet?
Well, a few places, actually. One is if you want to, like, get my tops and thoughts, essentially, when new cards come out, and essentially deck ideas. You can follow me on Twitter as PGDA Hansen. I also have a YouTube, which the YouTube is called Levdev. That's what the channel name is. But two video types that I make there is the Brewing Labs, which essentially is just deck techs for MTG Arena Standard. Sometimes Historic, and it's probably going to be a little bit of Historic with the new Strixhaven set, since we're getting a lot of new cards for Historic. Some of them kind of nutty, to say at the very least. Also, once in a blue moon, I do have a Twitch stream where I do try to stream kind of like regularly, but it's kind of like one of those I have to also balance work life as well. So, you know, kind of like a little juggle there, but I usually like to announce that. So I do also have a Twitch where I stream MTG Arena and sometimes some other games once in a blue moon.
For sure, for sure. So again, like I just mentioned a moment ago, today's topic is going to be based upon metas. And how we can try to identify the difference between meta brewing and jank brewing. Obviously, people who have been listening to my podcast for a while are very familiar with my takes on jank and how jank is not junk and can be quite powerful in the right situations with the right builds in EDH. However, since EDH is such an open format where we really don't have a defined meta outside of what is in your local playgroup, or potentially your local LGS, or if you play CEDH, there is more of a defined meta there on principle. But if you're just looking for casual EDH games, there's typically not really a meta to really challenge when you try to jank brew. So I really wanted to turn the conversation to, since we're in the middle of Strixhaven preview season right now, I really wanted to turn to the other formats, specifically looking at Standard, Historic, and let's say maybe Pioneer. I'm not sure if you're really in on that, but Standard and Historic, definitely. And obviously you're well known for looking at jank cards, trying to find some weird cool combos or just even combinations of cards in the 60-card formats. And I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit on your process for not only determining what is considered to be the meta for the format that you're playing in, but also trying to find some weird, potentially unplayable stuff, at least on first glance, that may end up actually being rather good once you put it all together and you start playing your format. Let's say when we can start going back to FNMs, you can start having Standard tournaments again, or playing Historic online. What is your process for first evaluating cards and then trying to find patterns in there to make decks that work?
Well, to start this, I first want to kind of talk about essentially kind of the thing of the realms of when people play Standard, of how they kind of like brew and such. And then I'll kind of go to my own process. Like, really, you kind of split into two branches. You go to kind of like people who, I like to say casual brew, and then there's people who do kind of like meta brewing or just try to brew to accommodate to the local meta. Whether it's at the local meta of trying to grind on the ladder, essentially, or kind of like the meta if going on MTG Online to try to 5-0, or kind of like even the local meta within your own game group once we play paper again at our local game store and such. So I kind of want to split between those two branches. And the theme is, a lot of people, when they think casual brew, they kind of think of people that's like, oh, just kind of like first year to me kind of scenario. But when you actually look at how people kind of like casual brew, it's kind of fascinating to see kind of like the diversions of it, essentially. Like, there is, of course, the drink brew, which I'll talk about in a minute. But there is also fiends that you kind of have to keep in mind when people are casually brewing and such. Like, one fiend is with Strixhaven coming out, and with pretty much whenever a new set comes out, you're going to get a lot of people that are going to try the new set or just jump into the set. And it kind of splits into a few divisions. One, there are some people who try to go into the thematical resonance of the set. Like, the one fiend that's really good, for example, here is with Strixhaven, and even with Guilds of Ravnica and such, we have all these kind of, like, clans slash also colleges and guilds and such, where people kind of, like, look at the cards, look at the thematics that the set is trying to portray. And while mostly those are used for kind of, like, draft and limited-based mechanics, a lot of people will take their brewing protocol and just try to brew around the thematics of what the standard set is providing. Like, for example, there'll probably be, once this set comes out, there'll probably be people who are wanting to make Quandrix decks or make, like, Prismari decks, especially if it resonates with something within their lives. Like, let's say, if you're a theater kid, you're probably going to try to make a Prismari deck, because it's like, oh, it's a bunch of theater kids within the thematics and the story and the lore. That resonates with me, and that's kind of like a way to customize kind of like my personality within my deck design. It's kind of the theme that I also like to do when I introduce new players to people to decks, essentially. I kind of like to use the theme where, essentially, for people who are starting out in the game, essentially use it like, say, I pretty much tell them that their deck is like a very volatile interactive scrapbook, where essentially you take your own like ideas, your own things that you love or you observe as being a planeswalker, and essentially express it with your opponent. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. So, since we're looking at Strixhaven previews right now, has there been any... I guess this is going to be a two-part question. So, one, are there any cards that you believe are potentially going to really interrupt the existing meta of Standard right now? And two, I also want to ask you what you look for when you're looking for new cards during any preview season. It doesn't have to be Strixhaven specifically, but since we are in there right now, it seems thematically relevant right now. Are there any themes you look for when during preview season to find out if cards will potentially open up new avenues or strengthen existing strategies or just in generally just be good staples for cards? I mean, what are your criteria for trying to find those meta-defining cards? And then, because obviously this will define how you eventually try to jank brew if you want to go with something that's against the meta.
Of course. Well, one thing I usually look at is essentially... when you start getting, like, experience and such and looking at kind of like cards within the standard meta, you kind of look at a few things. There's a lot of people who will always kind of, like, make an argument where some cards are not going to be as good as they are in the meta because they make the argument that due to a popular card within the current meta, it's going to cause the card to be quote-unquote unplayable, and I'm saying this in really, really hyphen quotation marks here. Like, the one that I always hear is how a lot of people have seen... well, there's a very bunch of cool 2/2 creatures that we're getting within Strixhaven, but it dies to Bonecrusher Giant, so I don't think it's going to be that good. Like, everybody makes the dies to Doomblade, dies to Bonecrusher, pretty much dies to Bonecrusher is the new dies to Doomblade argument within this circumstances. But the thing that you got to keep in mind is, yes, the most popular removal in the format is something you have to accommodate for when you are... analyzing your deck designs and also analyzing cards, but you kind of have to, it's kind of like a sure, you know that this can get removed, but you try to come back with it. Like, you try to be like, when I approach my deck designs, I always like to do it like, there's some people who like to make like a, the deck is going to do just one thing, and then the deck, if it doesn't do the one thing, you're in a bit of a pickle. When I approach my deck designs, I always try to do it where, yes, there is a primary game plan where it would be fun to win this way, but I always have a backup plan. And that's kind of like the thing that you will know from actually really good jank brewers to even just good meta brewers, is that they don't always throw themselves into one shtick. They will try to have a plan A, and then if plan A doesn't work, they try to go back to plan B, and then if plan B doesn't work, then just throw at what card they have and hope for the best. Now, as for this meta, I think one of the better cards that I have seen that actually kind of fights the meta currently at the moment is actually one that came from the Lorehold Guild specifically, and I'm actually researching it now, so let me get it real quick for you. It's actually a split NDSC card they revealed like a few days ago, which is the Flameskull Celebrant and Revel in Silence. Now, for the record, for people who are listening to the podcast and don't have access to a web browser, here's what these cards do. Essentially, you have, like with NDSC cards do in general, they essentially have two sides to them. The first side, the front side of the card, is Flameskull Celebrant, one in a red for a human shaman. It has, whenever an opponent activates an ability that isn't a mana ability, it deals one damage to that player. So pretty much anyone who had pretty much dealt with the cards like this that was an Amonkhet, as well as I think we got one during Guilds of Ravnica, you are very familiar with this effect. It's a 2-1, and also has an activated ability of one in a red to just buff it plus 2 attack until end of turn. Now, this side in general is just a alright card, but what excites me more is the Revel in Silence portion, which is a 2-white instant spell that has your opponents can't cast spells or activate Planeswalker loyalty abilities this turn, and then you exile the spell. Now, the reason why they have the exiles effect is so you don't softlock your opponent where you can just return the creature portion. Since the front portion of it is a creature, you can just use a cheap, like, reanimation spell to bring it back to your hand and softlock your opponent. Now, the reason why I like this as a meta card currently at the moment, now, one bit of a, as I like to say, a bit of a warning, this is within the current analysis of the current meta, which is kind of like when you analyze cards, you do have to keep that in mind, but you do have to always provide the little warning that metas are going to change when new sets come out. There are going to be some decks that might get a lot worse or get a lot better depending on cards. And the reason why I like this card is the factor is I like Revel in Silence a lot because it actually helps counter against one of the more popular decks in the meta at the moment, which is the Yorion Ultimatum decks. And the reason why it's actually a good counter to the deck is mostly just because you can actually cast the Revel in Silence once they cast the Emergent Ultimatum, essentially. And then when they cast that portion, what they do is essentially, sure, you still get the spell resolve of the Emergent Ultimatum, but due to the way that Emergent Ultimatum is worded, they can't cast the spells that they retrieve with Emergent Ultimatum. So it's actually a really surprisingly good tech card for Boros at the moment. And the best part is, you can still kind of mainboard this, because the factor is, if you don't need the Revel in Silence, you still get a pretty decent Piker with a pretty decent taxing effect, especially if your opponents are playing any Planeswalkers or any Mana Rocks and such. So that, from a meta perspective, that's the one card I'm looking at and being like, it's going to see some play. Also, as well, for the blue-green ramp decks, the essentially one that I've seen that actually got spoiled recently by, I believe, was Martin, I always get his last name pronunciation wrong, so forgive me in advance. Martin Juza? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But it's actually a really absurd card. It's the Quandris Cultivator, one green hybrid of the Quandris, aka blue, green, and blue. It's a total druid 3/4, and it has, whenever this enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a basic forest or island card, and then you put it onto the battlefield, not tapped, mind you. You put it, untap, and then shuffle your library. That's a very powerful effect currently in the meta, because we are, like, in a meta where we want to ramp a lot, especially with stuff like Ultimatum or really high-powered spells that we're getting within the set. So actually being able to, like, softcore ramp on turn 2, and then turn 3 be able to ramp with the Cultivator and still hold up cards like Counter Magic and such, that's very powerful within a constructive kind of, like, meta sets. Now, to go on the other end, there's also a lot of fun Jank Brew cards that I've been seeing. Like, the one that I think is probably my favorite is probably Cody. Now, this is more fun for Commander, but it's also fun for actually Standard as well. And I'll explain why in a minute. Cody Vorcivis Codex. Free mana for a legendary artifact creature construct. You can't cast permanent spells. That's a very costly effect on a 1/4. But it also has an effect of 4 mana, and you tap it for Rubug, and then it has pretty much, you can cast, whenever you cast your next spell, preferably instant sorcery, since you can't cast permanents, you didn't essentially cascade. I really like this card, because it's just kind of like one of those, I always like cards that, when I go into my Jank Brewing mode, I like cards that essentially say, hey, here's a fun challenge, try to brew around this. And the one thing I found Cody that's actually kind of fun is actually I'm more thinking with Cody in a reanimated cycling deck. Well, you use essentially the mana you generate to recycle creatures or even like put planeswalkers in your graveyard and such with like stuff like Cathartic Reunion and such. And then you can just cast reanimated spells to return those permanents back from the graveyard to the battlefield and thus being able to circumvent the cost of the card. So that's kind of like a way of how you do jank brewing and such. You just kind of look at the card, you kind of like observe the mechanics within the meta and such, and it's like, I'm going to have fun with this. I know I'm going to have to deal with the graveyard hate, so I'm probably going to have to accommodate with some hand disruption spells and stuff like that. But then hopefully I have the game plan, but then it's like, well, what if people remove Cody and such? What's plan B? Well, plan B then is just essentially, since we're still playing permanents within the deck design, because if Cody's removed, you can still play your planeswalkers or play your creatures that you were planning to reanimate originally, and hope still keep kind of like a tempo and such. One other variation of the Cody brew that I kind of wanted to do is also kind of like one where it's kind of what I like to call the command tribal, where essentially we take the current commands that are going to be coming into standard thanks to Strixhaven, and essentially just cast a command with Cody's mana ability and then essentially cascade into another powerful command, hopefully, and then throw in some token generation spells and hopefully build a board presence and then swing in kind of like a semi-mid-range aggro deck.
Okay, yeah. That sounds kind of disgusting, actually, seeing what we've seen of the commands lately, that mm-hmm. could provide you a lot of value.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so the next question I have for you is, now that we've talked about a little bit about Jank, a little bit about meta, if you were to try to introduce Standard to someone, let's say myself, because I have never personally tried Standard, it seems a very daunting task to me, especially right now when FNM in your local game store is non-existent or, it is completely non-existent. And I mean, personally, I feel daunted by the fact that Standard, you are always having to update your deck, so you can never keep the same thing together for too long without some pieces right. rotating out. And I guess my question to you is, let's say you were trying to teach me how to play Standard. What would you recommend meta versus jank to start out with for someone who's just getting introduced to the format and doesn't really have the time or the understanding of the new cards and seeing how they all work together? Which would you recommend that they go with first if they just want to go play at FNM?
Well, when working at FNM, essentially, if they're just starting out, I always kind of like recommend a starter deck of some sort. Like, the one that WotC has been doing recently is the Challenger decks. And the Challenger decks are a great starting point for people who are just starting out in Standard. Because, yeah, at a base, it's essentially a starting meta deck, more or less. But it's actually a nice frame point for people to get started. Because it really depends on the player. There's kind of like two types of starting players that you're going to get when playing Magic. You're going to get the person that's more there just to play the game in general. They just want to not really think much of the deck design process. They just want to jump down, play a game, essentially. And usually you can introduce them to either a Challenger deck or like, well, we don't have these anymore, but like the Planeswalker decks and such. But I think for now, their new shtick on that is like the intro, kind of like versus decks that I think they had one recently where you can actually download the codes for Arena as well. I think that was their recent shtick, I'm pretty sure. But usually I like to recommend starting people with that type of deck, essentially, because then what they can do is they look at the deck, they just essentially, I usually then try to give them kind of like a short kind of like thing of like, what's the formatics of the deck and how are they wanting to play it? Like, for example, if I give someone a mono red Challenger deck, I think it's pretty safe to say what you're pretty much doing with mono red aggro. Essentially say, your main point is you want to get things down, you want to hit the face, you want to try to get the opponent's life total down to zero before they can do anything funny, more or less. And then just kind of like explain the basic premise of it. And then the thing is, you don't want to like, it's kind of one of those scenes where I don't like the background helicopter players, so to speak. Because one of the things that's fun about the game that you really want to try to do is allow people to discover the interactions and discover plays and maybe find stuff that they will find fun, essentially. So you kind of want to do a thing where you don't want to be like, hey, this is probably the most optimal play for you to do. but you want them to discover it on their own. And then if they ask you for help, then be like, oh, hey, maybe this play or this line of play is actually pretty cool. So, like, if they get into the more competitive edge or such. However, there's also the people who want to essentially just jank brew, or maybe just start out brewing, like they want to do the more brewing capacities. And the way I recommend that aspect of them is just pretty much ask them, okay, what is your favorite card so far at the moment? And then they tell me their favorite card. Like, maybe it's like this one card or this second card. And I'm like, well, and then what I try to do essentially is be like, hey, I think this card might be helpful for your deck, and essentially just not like give them a full plan, like template or such, so to speak, but be like, well, if you're trying to win with this, like, let's say, for example, random magical Christmas land scenario, let's say for some reason we're able to start paper again and people started playing in Strixhaven Standard. And let's say that one of their favorite cards is, I'm going to just throw off a random card here. Like, let's say their favorite card is the new Prismari Dragon, essentially the one that generates a treasure token and makes your treasure tokens become mana rock.
Mm-hmm.
So I essentially be like, okay, I understand that's your favorite card. So then I try to give them hints of like, well, you might just want to find cards that help you generate treasures because you want to try to take advantage of Prismari and such. And, you know, be like, oh, Magda is such a cool card for your deck or such. Or maybe this removal spell that you can discard later just to generate treasure and such. Or even just be like, do off-the-wall suggestions and be like, well, maybe you can make like a Dwarf Dragon Tribal deck and such. Like, and then let them do it on their own pace. Essentially, just be like, oh, those are cool suggestions. And just essentially let them have fun with their own brewing process. Because that's kind of the fun thing if you're a brewer. You kind of want to go into the discovery process yourself. Now, one thing I did want to mention and kind of like talk about is I kind of wanted to dissipate, name of a magic card joke here. I kind of want to dissipate a common kind of like misconception notion where it seems like what I see some people kind of like, you kind of start this when you are a beginning magic player and such. You kind of see this dichotomy or this versus nature of like, oh, the creative brewers of how I like my deck versus the people who play for a meta deck and such, or play to be competitive and such. And it's kind of like how they have a conflicting nature. Like, they think they're just, you know, like, one side of the coin to the other side of the coin. But one thing I wanted to dissipate is that, honestly, they can be a lot more symbiotic with each other than you would think at first glance. Now, the common kind of like a difference notion that people's like, it's like, for example, they kind of go with the most contrived notions of the extremes of these archetypes, where essentially, like, the competitive brewer's like, oh, you just neck deck, you just don't think of anything, you just want to play whatever this person's playing and such, you don't do any creative iterations on your deck designs, yada yada yada. Like, really, really cliche stereotype, like, extreme, kind of like, pitcher kind of scenario. And then on the other hand, there's the other person who, essentially, the extreme notion on that side is, you're just a person who doesn't want to get better at the game, you just want to try to win with just a really weird thing, or, like, you're not wanting to better yourself in the games and such. And for the record, these are contrived notions. These are very harmful kind of like cliches that essentially I feel like beginning magic players kind of influence or generate essentially of the other one if they're not the other kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to dissipate that because there's actually a lot more symbiosis and a lot more ways that actually meta players can actually benefit from jank players and jank players can benefit from meta players. And it goes to one concept that I think a lot of people will kind of say question when I say it. And that is what I like to call packages. And basically what I mean by that is, the one thing is, what I mean by a package is, what I mean is a subsection of cards that people can put within their deck design to essentially to help them accommodate to a game strategy. Like, the most classic package that we all take for granted, that even both the meta and the jank brewer do take for granted, is how much lands you put in your deck and what type of lands you put. Now, essentially, of course, there's, like, general template rules where it's like, hey, you probably want to put in the new dual lands, or maybe you want to put in budget dual lands, or stuff like that. But in general, we all have the little template of, it's probably wise to put 24 lands into your decks and such. Like, that's a common package that we all see in Magic and such, and just essentially how we brew around, and that specific template can vary depending on how you want to brew, essentially. Now, on the other hand, when we break from the lands and just talk about packages in general, there's, like, for example, your typical, like, in Standard at the moment, let's say I'm playing, like, Black currently in Standard.
Okay.
There is, like, a typical removal package currently at the moment due to the way how the meta is formed. Like, the meta currently at the moment is either they go really tall with the Emergent Ultimatum decks or Control decks, or they go really, like, aggro, like Mono Red or Mono White aggro. So, in typical, they have, like, a typical removal package that both competitive players can essentially use, which is mostly, like, a variation of Heartless Axe, Eliminates, as well as sometimes Murderous Riders if they see, like, Planeswalkers within their grinding ladder, essentially, and your typical board wipe, which is kind of like Extinction Events and such. Now, you could just be like, oh, just go do that and you'll be fine, but I could also look at it from a jank brewing perspective and just be like, let's split the package into the number, okay, how many removal spells do you have? You're like, oh, I have, like, 7 removal spells, 2 board wipes and such, and then be like, oh, maybe I want to try some different removal spells or some different board wipes or such. And then essentially, like, look at the template from some meta decks, but still just be like, why is this a template? And then essentially try to influence it within your own brews. It's kind of like with Legos, if I have to, that's probably the best analogy I'll be like. Like, there's sometimes where you can fire the directions and such to make a specific piece and just see how that piece works. But what's also fun is you can sometimes just fire the directions just a little bit, but then, like, do something a little different, like put a blick in a different direction where you find that's more aesthetically pleasing, or maybe throw a card in that's not usual to just kind of, like, test the overall mechanic synergy if it works within your deck design or not, or just for the heck of it, at the very least. Besides that, though, I would also say just essentially with the packages and such, just, like, I think one of the reasons why I started this discussion, and we're actually going to go a little bit back to the Commander discussion a little bit, just a teeny bit, because the reason why I wanted to talk about this was originally, I think it was due to seeing the Twitter response as well as the social media response when Commander, like Command Knights and such, or Game Knights essentially did their typical template update to their Commander deck template video.
Yep.
And how a lot of people were like, well, what if I don't want to be that template? I don't want that to be the main rules. And a lot of people are not realizing the template is just instructions they can follow if you want to. Or maybe be like, maybe I should just put a few of that removal. But it's not a rules. It's not like a total guideline rules. It's just a suggestion. And if you're jank brewing, you could just look at that and be look at it as advice and be like, sure, I can follow these few templates I want to follow, but I really want to try this one strategy out or try this one thing because I think it's fun. It's not a solid rule. It's just a guideline that you can just try out if you want to, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah, that definitely makes sense because I know I watched that updated video and thought to myself that in the meta that, at least for EDH is concerned, that I play in, I don't need to check off all those boxes. I can afford to have more leeway, more room in constructing my decks because I don't necessarily have to worry about covering every single base because, I know my opponents, I know what their decks do, what scary cards are in there, and I adjust my decks accordingly to meet that meta. Now, am I going to change that for when we do eventually start going back and playing in person, or when I play on Spell Table, yes. But again, yeah, you're right. Is that is a template, and I think a lot of people do forget the fact that it is a template and it's not a strict guidelines. Although in some cases it has seemed to be like a guideline, like you must do this as well. I mean, unfortunately, our community is definitely split on this issue, where we unfortunately always have the gatekeeping concepts, people trying to force their agenda on other players, especially newer players. And, I mean, I got better at EDH by being crushed a million times by people who had, quote-unquote, more powerful decks because, I was running trash in my first deck, but two, just because there's a difference in expectations in EDH versus when you're playing a regular 60-card format like Standard, where everyone is trying to win in theory, the most efficient way possible. So you're going to go about your deck building a lot differently in those 60-card formats than you are going to in EDH, where you can have the opportunity to, one, really express yourself beyond what we're talking about for something like Standard, and you can also, in theory, have a lot of games where, you know, you don't need to worry about trying to win on turn 4 or turn 5. You can have the 15-turn Battlecruiser games that I love playing that just grind along. You win by combat damage, and you just have to slug your way to victory. So, yeah, so it's interesting just looking at how those are different and how the same principles still apply, no matter whether you're talking about Standard, whether you're talking about one of the non-rotating formats, whether you're talking about EDH, is that you can still have a meta, you can still have jank, and the definitions are going to change in some ways, but again, they're not going to change in all ways. So, I wanted to shift gears here a little bit over to Historic. So just obviously the hot new format for Magic the Gathering Arena, which is the now poster child at the moment for the non-rotating formats. So instead of Standard, you're losing some of your cards every few months as new sets come out. Historic allows you to have a set number of cards that you're able to use from that keeps growing with every new set. So compared to something like Standard, where do you sit on the same questions I asked you about, like the Strixhaven previews, where would you sit on the Historic side of things, where there's a larger card pool and it may be more difficult even then for a new player to get in, just because there's, you know, you're taking the several hundred legal cards in Standard, and all of a sudden tripling, quadrupling the number of legal cards when you get to Historic. That seems like an awful lot of cards that people who are new to the format really need to know, and gets even worse if you're trying to get into something like Legacy, where you have the entire back catalog of Magic available to you. I mean, where would you even begin in something like that? I just wanted to hear your thoughts on the non-rotating formats and how you can take some of the things you spoke on regarding the meta, regarding jank, from Standard and applying that to something like Historic.
Well, with Historic, it's one of the things you'll notice when you start playing Historic is that a lot of people will try to play the decks that they usually like to play in Standard, and then they try to upgrade it for the Historic. Like, it's not just like they completely start from the ground up. Some people do, but most generally, like, when I play Historic, it's either a few things. It's either A, people are playing what is the meta deck at the moment, whether it's just a specific interaction of cards that due to the Historic Anthology, or just with the recent addition of new cards from Standard, as well as just essentially their supplementary products, like their remastered sets, essentially. But they usually, what they do is they take their archetype and then they essentially upgraded it with cards that might better the archetype. Like, one of the classic examples is the aggro decks. Like, when Dominaria happened, like, there was the aggro deck where it's kind of like the blue-red wizard aggro deck. And then what a lot of people did is, once the rotation happened, I kind of noticed this in Historic, they actually just essentially translated their deck, but they usually will keep their deck and then they upgrade it with new cards that come from sets and such and see if it betters their deck designs. Which sometimes happens, especially when you get, like, new wizards or new burn spells and stuff like that. So that's one approach. And then if you're going into the approach where you're going in like as a new fresh face with just a few bit of cards, my best advice is just essentially, is like I say, for a beginning Standard player, look at your favorite card or your favorite archetype you like to play and try to brew around with card pools that help complement your play style or complement what you like to play. Like, for some people, they really like to make like janky, like really ridiculously combo decks. And this is where I would like, this is hard because with Historic in general, I usually prefer people to just try to upgrade their archetypes. But the problem is, when you try to make like a completely new deck, there's the problem where Arena's economy at the moment is still a little bit questionable.
Inefficient. we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. And the problem is, you kind of, if you want to make like specific decks or like meta decks, you have to have a specific access to either getting wild cards, which then requires you to have to buy packs of either the old set to hopefully get the signature cards, or at the very least to get the wild cards you need, or just get enough gems or slash kind of like fill in points for your little archive that gives you more wild cards and such. So that's why I don't really like to recommend somebody like, oh, here's this fresh new deck that might have cards you don't have yet, because I know that the wild card pool is very, very restrictive depending on your budget and also depending on what you play. So that's why I kind of like, when approaching historic and eternal formats in general, I usually just essentially be like, what do you like to play? And then essentially just try to give them the best kind of like budget option. Like, for example, if they're playing historic on Arena, I usually don't want to give them a deck that requires like 20 mythic wild cards, let's just say. Mm-hmm. I would like to give them a deck that's like, hey, here's a cool deck with some commons slash also uncommons that are still a really good like archetype. Like, for example, probably one of the better historic archetypes at the moment is probably... The one that I would say that's the best budget-oriented at the moment is probably the Auras deck. And yes, it is technically the best, one of the best decks in historic at the moment. But it is one of the decks that have only a few rares that you have to get just from the specific jumpstart stuff, though it only costs a few rare wild cards. But there is a lot of budget alterations you can do with the Aura deck design that just only requires just a bunch of common slash uncommon wild cards, which makes it an easy deck to construct. Now, on the other hand, there's also just the approach where I would say just essentially take a look at your current collection, ask yourself what your favorite colors is, what's your favorite spells, and then just throw it in and just be like, what's your overall win condition? Okay, I'm going to try to win this way. I'm going to play some of my favorite spells. Is it going to be the most efficient deck in the world? Probably not. Is it going to be competitive to meta? Probably not. But the thing that I kind of learned when you're trying to either grind or just casually play, it's usually you just want to play with the cards that you have fun with. Yes, some people will try to play to win. You have to always accommodate for that. And maybe you will, with your deck designs, if you can, try to make the closest meta deck you can construct and just try to go into the grinding ladder to try to win up, to try to get the mythic and stuff like that. But there are just some times where you just need to really just take a collection of cards that you like, throw it into a brew, and don't expect to win it, like, just expect to have fun, because as long as you're having fun with the cards you're playing, it's more fun to actually play games like that, at least from a jank brewer perspective, than to be like, oh, I'm just going to take the top meta deck and just grind, grind, grind. Now, I'm going to say one rebuttal here. I am not saying that it's always boring when you play meta decks and such, because sometimes with meta decks in general, they actually have some interesting piloting skills that's kind of fun that people kind of like learn. It's kind of like when we go back to kind of like the starting deck kind of scenario where it's like you give someone a starting deck and then they essentially learn how to pilot that starting deck, how to pilot that archetype. That's kind of the thing that you kind of see with meta decks and people who play specific meta decks. It's essentially that they actually have more fun piloting the specific archetype and figuring out the little ambiguities and such. Like, for example, I'm going to rotate a little back to standard just for my example because this is the best example I could think of.
Okay, sure.
If there's one archetype that kind of makes me a little bit salty as a jank brewer player, is kind of like the rogue mill archetype that's currently popular in standard. Mostly that's because of my playstyle. I like to play janky combo decks, and the problem is when your combos get milled, it's a little bit eh. But I will admit, it is still a really good deck, and I can compliment that people who pilot the deck well, there's a lot of ambiguities. It's hard because people kind of, when they get into the net decking argument or net decking cliche stereotype, it's like, oh, you're just playing this and you're playing it like a brain dead deck. No. There are some times when you play those top tier meta decks where if you know how to properly pilot the deck, you can actually find some really interesting counterplay and such to how to play against the current meta and just see how the interactions. Like, if you watch any popular tournaments and such where the popular meta decks happen, it's kind of interesting to see how essentially top tier meta decks essentially go against each other and how they kind of do a essentially fight each other or just essentially the plays that they think. Because sometimes, like, there's some really clever plays when you do see top-tier magic and such. It's quite fascinating, actually. And sometimes you can actually take those plays and take the plays that you see from top-tier meta decks, or not even, like, packages in general, but just, like, little plays where it's like, oh, I didn't know this is an interaction on the stack you could do with this certain mechanic within Standard. Or, Oh, that's actually a cool interaction with the card that I had not considered that you sometimes will see from top tier meta decks, which then you can take those lessons and actually apply it within your kind of like janky brew. Like maybe you take this little trick you learn from a top tier player and be like, well, what if I apply it to this janky deck? Will it complement or negate the deck design? And just that experimentation and such is one thing I do love about brewing in Standard and Historic, because yeah, sometimes you will play kind of like the tier decks, but sometimes you usually do it just to learn how to pilot the deck and learn the interactions and synergies so that when you try to do your own janky brews, you can keep those synergies and those interactions in mind to help complement your deck design.
Mm-hmm. And I'm always brought, when we are talking about this, the meta versus jank brew discussion, I'm always reminded of the Loading Ready Run Friday Nights episode about trying to come up with the most unique deck list to try to be able to win a promo pack. Again, I can't remember which set it was, but to be able to win a promo pack versus trying to play an established meta, obviously it's a comedy series, so it doesn't necessarily have to be true to form necessarily, but the concept there is that I think personally, even as someone who doesn't play Standard, is the fact that there is definitely a room for jank brews compared to just trying to run whatever deck, you know, card for card, just won a, you know, back when we used to have them, used to win a GP, or used to mm-hmm. win any of the events that are going on online right now, is that you still obviously need to play the deck. And if you can play your jank deck very well, you know all the lines that are necessary, you can definitely have an opportunity to be able to beat someone with one of the tier one meta decks. So
exactly.
It's just one of those situations where it all comes down to, you know, luck, deck building, and piloting skill. And if you're missing something in one of those, you probably are opening the door to maybe lose, you know, if things don't go your way. So it's just one of those interesting things that it still manifests itself in the 60 card formats. But again, I wanted to loop back to EDH here. And again, obviously you love building a bunch of janky decks. I like building janky decks in EDH. And again, I've gone about over those in detail on previous episodes of the podcast. And I wanted to ask you how you would bring what we've talked about in regards to meta versus jank from the 60 card format into something like EDH, which doesn't necessarily have a defined meta, but has access to all the cards in Magic's history, as well as just has a lot of room for jank brews.
Well, for that one, the approach I usually do when I go to EDH is, the best part with EDH is the factor is that the commander does help you a lot when you're trying to build your deck archetype. Because what you do is you take your favorite, let's say you take your favorite legendary card, or you take a cool legendary card that you find that's awesome and such. And then what you do is you essentially look at that card, you essentially observe it and be like, oh, what's our fun cards I want to play with and such. And sometimes they're cards that are synergistic with the commander, or sometimes it could just be your pet cards within your format, like maybe you're very nostalgic of a card. Like, for example, one of the decks I was originally piloting a while back was, I was piloting and playing with EDH, I was playing the Andre discard matter deck kind of scenario. And, you know, it had a basic template that, due to the introduction of the deck, and it was a pre-constructed product. But I did adjust it and actually added cards in there that actually I were very nostalgic from. Which, for example, like the cards I put in there was literally Lupine Prototype, as well as the two-cost Tybalt. Not the really good Tybalt in Standard at the moment, the really questionable two-cost Tybalt. And that's because I was very nostalgic, since I literally made a Tybalt Legacy Madness deck with those two cards. Well, not with Lupine Prototype, but with the Tybalt and with the Madness cards that were available at the time. So I was very nostalgic of those cards, and I kind of want to throw them in. And that's kind of the thing you will see with EDH in general. Sometimes, it's like I said with the, kind of like how when people start with deck building and such, or when they're beginning players and such, and they're in the deck building process, is they usually will treat it like a scrapbook. Yes, there will be people who will play and just essentially look at the cards that are most synergistic with their deck design and then just try to cram it all in with templates and all that stuff. But there's also just some people who, like, will essentially take some of their favorite cards, and just throw it in just for fun, just for memory, just because they love the interaction of the card or just see how it plays, essentially, with in a multiplayer interaction, more or less.
Yeah, so could you go through an example of how you would go try to use some of these lessons that you've learned from the 60-card formats into building an EDH deck, just trying to, you know, whether it's card selection or whether you're trying to find some sort of line of play, just some things that you've brought over, maybe give an example of one of your other existing decks, just, you know, kind of keep the theme going and just, you know, try something new.
Example, I guess if we want to do an example, like one of my previous commander decks was, let's see, this one is going to be interesting because the one that I remember brewing for Standard a while back was essentially due to Guilds of Ravnica and such. This is weird because I'm going to have to talk about Guilds of Ravnica Standard, but I also have to talk about a Modern Horizons card. And essentially the card they was Arula, essentially the bear commander.
Okay.
And for me, I kind of was thinking of a funny little janky deck tech where essentially one of the things I kind of noticed is like, oh, Guild of Ravnica has a lot of semi-bear cards within their colors, so to speak. So I literally looked at that, and then I looked at, oh, Niv-Mizzet, the five-color Niv-Mizzet, I actually really like playing that card. So then, and I also like, oh, I really like a lot of Guild of Ravnica color spells. So I literally made a bear tribal Niv-Mizzet deck where the basic premise of it is just essentially Niv-Mizzet playing some of my favorite kind of like multicolor spells from Standard at that time, and even through some that were in other older formats that I were able to have access to and such that I thought would complement the deck, and then throw every two cost draft bear that was within the respectable guild at that time, like the Rathdos bear, the essentially the Azorius, name all the guilds, all those two, like those two drops that are essentially their guild colors. I threw
the guild
in the
mages?
Deck. The guild mages, yes. I threw all those in within the deck design, and I just called it Bear Tribal just for comedy purposes. And then I also throw in, like, I think it was Conspiracy, so that I can name an arcane adaptation at the time, so that I can name it, them actually Bear, so they can synergize with Arula.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like an approach, I would say, if you were taking like a standard approach, is sometimes you're just going to take a pet card of yours that are from a constructed format and essentially just expand on it, I guess, for lack of a better word. Because the thing that you got to keep in mind, the difference between a 60-card format and EDH, is with 60-card formats, you do have play sets of cards. So you can kind of like develop packages a lot more easier and such, so to speak. However, with the singleton format that is Commander, you do have to have the restriction of each one card, but that does allow you the opportunity to be able to play with a lot more cards that you probably wouldn't have played within your standard deck design. Like, let's say, for example, there was maybe one card that you would probably only played in Limited, but you didn't really play in Constructed because you already had your curved filled, so to speak, within, mm-hmm. like, the number of free drops you have. You're like, oh, I can throw this card that I really like to play in Limited, but wasn't able to play in Standard, but I could throw it in this Commander deck because I really need to find these free drops or two drops and such, and I really like playing with these cards and such. It's kind of like stuff like that, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. And it's definitely interesting that since we don't really have a meta in EDH, I mean, we have the room to be able to be so creative and try to think of different ways to try to accomplish the same win condition, but we don't necessarily have to have the exact same deck. The fact that we only have one copy of every card except basic lands forces us to definitely be more discerning in our choices, but also allows us the freedom to come up with, you know, quote-unquote suboptimal choices that can still work within the deck. So again, for your Niv-Mizzet deck there, you didn't have to build, you know, actual bear subtype tribal in order to make a quote-unquote bear deck. You were able to find a way to be able to work around some of the inherent issues with there and be able to come up with something that then you had to find a workaround, in other words. But the fact is that it ends up being memorable because you were able to find a way to play all those cards, be able to utilize all those cards you would have from Standard, etc., and be able to find some sort of unique strategy that made it work instead of just being stuck in the same vein of, you know, this deck's not going to work if I import it into 100 card format. It's, you know, just there's too many things that get lost in translation there. And that's what's nice about EDH is you mm-hmm. can take those extra copies, the extra play sets of the cards. You only need the one, and you can come up with two or three other cards that do something functionally similar in EDH, and you're probably fine. So
exactly.
Yes. So just being able to have the freedom to be able to build whatever you want in EDH is really why I keep coming back to it. And from the sound of things, it's definitely something that you take a lesson of and also take stock of whenever you're building any sort of deck, whether that's 60 card or whether that's 100 card singleton like EDH.
It's Zacharelna to the Pepperelna.
All right. Well, I think we've had a very good discussion here today. Just want to tell, if you could just tell the people where you can be found again on the internet.
Of course. I can be found on Twitter as PGD Hansen. I can also be found on YouTube as well as Twitch with LevDev. And usually with YouTube, I do the Brewing Lab videos as well as Top Deck Thoughts. And Twitch, I just usually stream MTG Arena. But I also like to jump on and guest on EDH streams just to play some funny EDH decks once in a blue moon just to have some fun.
Yep. And you can find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. You can also find the back catalog of these podcast episodes on Spotify, Google Casts, and Apple Podcasts, and wherever fine podcasts are found. So, Lev, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today. It's been great.
And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be able to talk about this subject.
All right. Well, thanks for being on here. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day.
See y'all later.